Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. One feature of the Affordable Care Act, our healthcare reform law, is its emphasis on promoting health and wellness. But how does a law promote health and wellness? Today on Health Styles, we're talking about both the individual approach to promoting health and wellness and the policy connection to promoting health and wellness, particularly for frontline workers. And I'm really pleased to have on Health Styles today to talk with us about this topic, Dr. Nancy Rudner, who is an advanced practice nurse who provides health coaching in workplaces. And Nancy, thank you so much for joining us today on Health Styles.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we've got to start off with, what's a health coach? What is coaching in health? We know coaching of a sports team, but what's coaching in health?
Well, coaching in sports teams helps people to be their best, and health coaching really helps them to be as healthy as possible. We have an incredible medical system, which is, I call it the best drug distribution system in the world, where you can get prescriptions, but you really can't get the help you need to be healthier. It just doesn't fit into the way we have our medical system set up for the most part.
And I know myself, because I go to a nutritional coach, that we tend to think, those of us who work in healthcare, including nurses like myself, physicians, and others, think that all we have to do is give people information and they'll do the right thing.
And that has been such a mistake that we've been doing for years. It's not lack of information. There really aren't too many obese people who don't know that they have a weight problem, for example.
Yes.
So finding out what your BMI is not earth-shaking change. The real question,
your BMI being your
body mass index, which is a ratio of your height to your weight.
And
it tells people where they stand relative to norms, kind of like the growth charts that we used in the past.
Yeah.
But the real issue for people is what can they do that fits into their life? And telling someone to go out and eat better is too vague. Mm. Or go out and exercise, and they think of a gym and they don't like the gym.
Mm.
So a lot of what a health coach does is help people understand their health, help them figure out what their questions are, what their motivations are, what will work for them. Coaching uses a lot of motivational interviewing, which really helps the person come up with their plan for what they want. We can't tell people how to be healthier. Mm-hmm. We can only guide them.
And part of it, too, is setting realistic short-term goals, isn't it, that really are achievable so you're not feeling like, oh, I'm going to lose 50 pounds and I've only lost 1 pound. I'll never get there.
Right. In helping many people have very unrealistic expectations of themselves, so they set themselves up to fail. They're disappointed, and then they get discouraged and don't continue. Mm. And weight loss is a classic, or quitting smoking. It takes something like 6 to 9 attempts to really quit smoking.
Mm.
And each attempt is getting you closer. But if you look at it as failure and you don't want to try the next attempt, you won't get there. People don't quit smoking or lose weight because someone tells them to. They do it because they want to, because that's an internal motivation. Part of coaching is helping people find that internal motivation.
Mm. So why is this all so difficult, though? Why do we have such a hard time living healthier lives?
There's many factors, but one is our environment is not conducive. We promote unhealthy foods. That's what's available. If you try to eat healthy, you're very challenged. I tell my clients often, if you just bring food from home, you're so much further ahead than eating all your meals out. But we don't have, other than New York City and some of the other major cities, we don't have mass transit, so people aren't spending a lot of time in their car. And clearly, studies have shown that the more sprawl in a community, the higher the proportion of overweight and obesity.
Mm.
But there is also a segment of our population which not only doesn't have much access to coaching, but they don't have the basic information. I work with a lot of blue-collar workers, the people who pave the roads and cut the trees and make the signs on the roads and cut the grass in the parks. Mm. And they don't understand many of their health issues. They go to a clinician, they may find out they have high blood pressure. It's this vague disease, they don't see it. They're very concrete thinkers. It's very vague. It's never been explained to them. But once it's explained in terms of pipes and tubes, you know, and something that they can relate to and they can ask questions, then their ability to understand, to manage their disease is increased dramatically.
So why aren't they able to access this kind of care?
Well, one thing is, you know, the average office visit for primary care, there's about 7 minutes that you have with your primary care provider. The nurse practitioner role was supposed to be a lot more coaching and education, but as that role got morphed more into a medical care delivery system, there wasn't enough time. So in 7 minutes, when you need to first figure out what the problems are, do a diagnosis, order tests, write prescriptions, there's not a lot of time to get into the underlying issues or even find out what the patient understands or doesn't understand. Then on top of that, we so often give patients material that's written at the 9th or 12th grade reading level.
Well,
that's not what the literacy level is for many, many patients.
So the Affordable Care Act is our health care reform law at the moment. How does this pretend to change this situation?
Well, the health care reform law tries to change the model from fee-for-service, paying for the more the clinician does, the more he or she gets paid, to an accountable system, a system of prevention. There are dollars for prevention. There's money for workplace health promotion. There's money for education and counseling. And that really shifts the way we do care. But also, there's incentives. For example, if somebody is hospitalized and then readmitted for the same diagnosis, that often means they didn't get the care they needed when they were inside the hospital or didn't get enough education for when they were going to be discharged. Now, this, you know, with healthcare reform, there's more incentives to prevent those readmissions.
And what about the issue of coverage? I know for some frontline workers, the copays on their insurance policy may prevent them from actually using the insurance, getting insurance, and if they do have it, because they're required to have it, avoiding going to a healthcare provider because the copays are more than they can afford.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Diana, because that is an incredible barrier. If you've got, let's say, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, which often go together, and you're on four different drugs with four different copays, plus your office visit, plus your specialist copay, and you're making $30,000 a year, it doesn't work. Not only do the services not work for you, but you can't afford to use your benefits. And, I, you know, there's a new definition I've seen among a lot of the people that I work with where cost sharing to them means you take your diabetes medicine and you share it with your wife. And I did have a patient who did this. His wife was unemployed. They had to cut expenses. They shared the diabetes medicine. They both ended up in the hospital. So we are paying for health care for all, but we're paying on the wrong side of the equation right now. Health care reform gives people much more access to the prevention to their medications. One of the changes we did at one of the workplaces that I work is we removed the copays for all the drugs for hypertension, diabetes.
Ah.
The adherence rates have just improved dramatically.
Really? That's interesting.
Very interesting. And there's been a study that was done by a large corporation where they did that, and they had the same results. It's pretty consistent. It doesn't make sense to have copays for preventive medications. And we really want to encourage utilization of prevention as much as possible. Healthcare reform law also removes the copays for preventive exams. For example, colonoscopy, for many people, the copay deductible in the past has been $500 or more. Now, with healthcare reform, there is no copay.
So, Nancy, the Supreme Court is considering whether to uphold or overturn all or part of the Affordable Care Act. What would this mean to people who are frontline workers, blue-collar, pink-collar workers, in terms of what's about to take place under the Affordable Care Act or has already taken place in terms of improving their access to health care that will actually improve their health?
You know, we've had this whole national dialogue on health care without a real look at the facts. The Kaiser Family Foundation has a quiz, 10 simple questions about health care reform. Only 1% of the population can get 100% on that quiz, and only 30% can pass it. So the people are enjoying some of the benefits of the plan. Most people don't really know what's in it. Mm. It's been attacked from so many different angles, and the dialogue has gotten so confused. But people who have children who are under age 26 and they're on their health insurance, that benefit began over a year ago. That's made a huge difference, especially with the high unemployment of 18 to 24-year-olds, 18 to 26-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get your kid through high school or through college, and then they can't get a job with insurance. Well, now they're able to be on the family's insurance. That's made a big difference. The copay is being removed from preventive care, the office visit, the annual checkup, no copay. People are enjoying these benefits, and they're utilizing care more because they don't have the financial barriers. So, you know, depending on what will happen with that Supreme Court decision, which pieces will be rolled back, which will continue, a lot of that is not clear.
Mm.
But what is clear is that most people don't know what's in the law.
What are some other things that are in the law that you think people don't know about but ought to know about?
One thing is the exchanges. The exchange will be a marketplace where individuals and small businesses can purchase health insurance, regardless whether they have pre-existing conditions or not. And they'll be able to compare. It'll be a core package of benefits, so you can compare apples to apples. Right now, if you try to buy independent insurance and you go to three different health insurance companies, you can't compare what you're getting. It's very confusing. So the exchanges will be a way that people will be able to purchase insurance. There will also be subsidies for people who have low income so that they can purchase insurance. And the goal is to have more of the population insured, so we have fewer people showing up in the emergency room for conditions that could have been prevented with lower cost outpatient care. And so hospitals have less uncompensated care because there are no free lunches. When people show up in the emergency room without insurance, the hospital has to write that off as uncompensated care, and it raises the cost of doing business for everyone. One thing, when you asked about what's in the health care reform law, the AARP has a wonderful guide. It's an interactive tool on the web that anyone can go in. You put in information about yourself, 6 simple questions, like whether you're employed or not, and your age, your gender, and it will tell you specifically what's in the law for you. And the website for that is www.aarp.org/healthlawguide.
It's one more time.
www.aarp.org/healthlawguide.
And so I can go to that and put in some information about myself, and it'll tell me some things that are in the law that would benefit me.
Exactly. I think it's 6 simple questions that you answer, and it will tell you this is how the law will affect you.
So did you follow the Supreme Court hearings on this, Nancy?
Most of it, yes.
Yes. So, and before I get to this, let me just remind listeners that this is Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, and I'm talking with Dr. Nancy Rudner, an advanced practice nurse who provides health coaching in workplaces. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act and its relevance to blue-collar, pink-collar workers in particular, but is particularly around promoting health and wellness and trying to alert people to a little bit more of what's in this law that may not be a law, depending upon what the Supreme Court does with it in June. Tell us what your thoughts are about what the Supreme, if you have any, are you making bets on what the Supreme Court will do?
No. No. It is. It will be what it will be. And my betting won't change anything. But if it doesn't pass,
yes.
One thing is, we have to have some kind of health care reform. Not doing anything is not an option. We cannot compete in the global market. We can, you know, Lee Iacocca has been saying this for, who was president of one of the large auto companies. And he was saying 25 years ago, we can't compete on the global market in our cars because such a large percentage of our cost of doing business is paying for medical care. Mm-hmm. We have a very sophisticated medical system that's poorly distributed, so we end up paying on the wrong side of the equation. Mm-hmm. We're paying for sick care for everybody now. We'll save a lot more money if we can have people able to access preventive care. A classic example is high blood pressure. People have access to medication for their high blood pressure. They understand what it's for. They have their blood pressure under control. They're significantly less likely to have a stroke. And once somebody has a stroke, that's a very expensive treatment, you know, not to mention the effect on the quality of life.
The other thing is
we pay more than all other industrialized nations per capita for health care, and our life expectancy is lower.
Yeah. We do worse on almost every indicator of health and health care efficiency compared to other countries. It's sort of stunning. So if the Supreme Court overturns this law, how likely do you think it is that businesses will work with health insurance plans to try to retain some of the features that are in this law in their own plans that they're offering for workers, for example, to what extent do you think that they will try to negotiate more of a benefit for health and wellness interventions or screenings and health promotion activities without copays?
Well, I am seeing more employers understanding the importance of prevention. There's been a recent trend for more workplace health promotion. Sometimes it is paid for by the insurance company. Sometimes it's paid for separately. I think that the reduction in copays for preventive care is going to have to happen. Mm-hmm. And health plans have these very sophisticated disease management programs and telephonic health coaching. They don't reach the employees. You know, a lot of, especially blue-collar workers, they're not on the computer, they're not going to go to a website, and they're not going to talk to a stranger on the phone. So one thing that we need is systems that people can have, talk to a real-life person face-to-face to learn about their health and develop a plan to be healthier. I think a lot of employers are starting to understand that where the money will come from, whether it will come from insurance companies or whether it will come from employers, it's a mixed bag.
So, Nancy, you do health coaching for workplaces. Describe what you might do for an employer.
If the first step is building trust with the employees, and I found in some cases, it's taken a year. People have had patients, and the employees have had negative encounters with medical system. They're very skeptical. They think that somebody's going to be telling them what to do. It takes a year to just develop the trust. But what I do is I work with people who are ready to make a change and want information, want guidance, want to do a work plan on how they're going to make that change. One of the things I've seen is sometimes there's some ways that our system just doesn't work. Like a patient goes to a primary care provider, they get a lab slip. Right? They need to have their lab drawn. They need to be fasting. Well, they have to be at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. The lab's open at 7:30. Right. So the lab slips stay in their trucks. I can't tell you how many people have said, oh, let me get you my lab slip. And they'll go out to their truck, and there'll be this beat-up piece of paper that must be 60 days old because it's so hard for them to access it. And then the communication problems that they have with healthcare providers who don't take the time to really talk with them and help make sure that they understand what's going on. Some people have wonderful relationships with their primary care providers, and others, They'll go one time. They won't feel they were treated right. They don't come back. The other thing that I see is some of the providers charge $25 if you're a no-show. Well, for somebody making very little money, that's a showstopper.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't go back. Mm-hmm. So they get very, their care gets very chopped up. Another thing I've seen is it's really hard for some people to understand these invisible diseases like high blood pressure.
Hmm.
If you can't see it, it must not exist, especially if it costs money to treat it. Hmm. It must not exist, right?
Hmm. So if I'm an employer, I'm calling you in because I want to reduce my health care costs by promoting the health of my employees and not having them in emergency rooms and in hospitals as often. Is that why I'm having you come in?
Well, that would be one objective. Another is to have a healthier workforce for more productivity, which is probably the more immediate impact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't go in and reverse 30 years of bad eating, no exercise and smoking, and help people stay out of the emergency room. You know, it's a process. It's changing a corporate culture, mm-hmm. a company culture. So that you know, the lifestyle of come to work early in the morning, have a Coke, 10:30 donut break, you know, the stuff adds up.
Mm.
So it's changing that to having, you know, and I'm thinking of one group that has now at their staff meetings, they have grapes all the time. These guys love grapes. They gave up the donuts, switched to grapes.
Nice.
I have a lot of people who just, they start to walk. They start to exercise. They start to understand that they can do it. You know, but when they start to exercise, they start to eat better. They're much more energetic on the job.
Mm.
The other thing is that workplace health promotion programs have been shown to reduce workers' comp injuries.
Mm.
You think about someone with poorly controlled diabetes, the end of it, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they start getting jittery. They're operating heavy machinery. That's not a good scene.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and is this an increasing trend across the country for employers to have people like you come in to do health coaching?
It has been increasing. It kind of hit some snags with the recession.
Mm.
I see it's picking up again. The question I have is whether the programs that employers do will be appropriate for all workers.
Mm.
There's so much. If you look at the websites for so many of the disease management workplace health coaching programs, it's all office workers. It's all blue, white-collar jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's all computerized and web-based.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't work for a lot of our workers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the folks with the lowest health literacy are the ones who can benefit the most. I think that's the low-hanging fruit.
Mm.
If you can work with the people who really don't have access to information, you can really make an impact.
Well, it's very important work, and I'm really glad that you're doing it and speaking about it, Nancy, and I appreciate your coming on to Health Styles today. I wanted to have you give one more time that website for AARP's Health Law Guide where you can plug in a little bit of information, answer 6 questions, and it'll tell you what's in the law for you. Can you give that website again?
That is www.aarp.org/health-law-guide.
aarp.org/health-law-guide. And that's sounds like a really good resource, and it's really important, I think, that people understand what is in that law and how people will benefit from it. And hopefully in June, we will have a Supreme Court that demonstrates that it can operate off of wisdom instead of politics. But that remains to be seen, I guess. But I want to thank you again, Dr. Nancy Redner, an advanced practice nurse who provides health coaching in workplaces. If people would like to get in touch with you or learn more about the work you're doing, how can they do that?
You can go to my website, healthaction.biz, B-I-Z.
Healthaction.biz,
B-I-Z?
B-I-Z. Great. And that's your website?
Yes, my website.
Great. Thank you so much, Nancy, for being on the program today.
My pleasure.
Have a healthy day. Yeah, a healthy day. You've been listening to Health Styles, and we do hope all of the listeners are having a healthy day. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program. It's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us on our website, our blog, at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's Center for HealthMediaPolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in, and do have a healthy day. Thank you.